Hey everybody, Thurbleton here. I am in a unfortunate turn of events where I have a bunch of recordings that I need to get posted, sort of a backlog. And so we'll have another episode coming out at the tail end of this week, possibly the weekend when I get around to it. And that will be the episode we recorded at the start of PAX. And then probably the next week's episode, hopefully at the start of the week, we'll be back on track of a regular weekly schedule. But yeah, that's a turn of events. This is just a very light episode of New Brahma and Cynic talking about stuff that I haven't quite listened to yet, so I don't remember, even though I was there for recording. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and check your feeds later in the weekend for another episode of the Lincoln Scotchcast. That's what we're calling it these days, Scotchcast. Here we go.
Welcome to the Scotchcast. This is the Jibbone Communities podcast for the week of the 23rd of August, 2014. My name is Soak Professor Nick. Joining me today is Nubarama.
Hi! It's me, Nubarama!
Holy shit, it has been the longest time since I've done that intro.
Yeah. Yep.
Holy cow. It's like old...
13, what?
Yeah, probably. It's
whatever
memories, man.
Came out, shit.
Jeez. Also joining us maybe today is Thurbleton. He's hosting the call to record this podcast because me and Noob, let's just say we're unable to. We couldn't be fucked. That's just the truth. That's the truth of it, right?
Like connecting wires and shit.
Yeah, he's essentially our Drew. Daniel. What is it? Daniel Ostreicher? What's his name? Dan.
What are you talking about? Dan Richter.
Ostreicher, the new producer in Jack Bomb.
I don't remember his name.
I don't forget his first name. Anyway, so he's our striker today, but the main stars of the show are just going to be me and Noob. We're going
to
be rapping.
Right. Back to 2012.
We haven't done this since, I think, the Thanksgiving special or some shit.
Oh, God. Is that the one where I pretended to go to Japan?
Potentially, I don't know.
How much things have changed. Now I don't even need to pretend. I've actually been there.
Now you can just like make up stories of shit that happened while you're at Japan.
Or I'll just make up stories of things that also didn't happen anyways. Just because.
Oh, geez. I remember that we had a loop missing from last week. We promised more Japan stories from New Brahma.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Japan. We only talked about second best Korea. Yeah.
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 And that's the thing. Like, so we had one story last week, and it was about... the horrible education system. So I want you to expound. This is a free episode. We're going to be talking about whatever games might come up.
I think we have games planned. I've been playing video. Have you been playing video games?
I've been playing Benchmarks, which doesn't really count, but it kind of ties into some of the news.
I guess.
But we have been playing collectively one video game. Which is you. But before we get there, we'll talk about what we've been doing. And since we haven't been doing anything interesting during the actual week, let's talk about the past. Nubarama.
Okay. Wait, what are we talking about?
Japan. All right. So one story was the Japanese people's education system.
No, it was the Korean education system more than Japan. I don't know that much about it. I didn't hang around schools. And if I did hang around schools, it would be around like elementary schools. So it wouldn't help me that much.
And you wouldn't tell us anyway.
No. Probably. No. But I think like just going back to like the original discussion on what it was sort of like how students are literally at school into the right before the day passes onto the next day, and they get like 6 hours of sleep after coming home from school at like 11 p.m. And I'm getting a lot of feedback. Is that on my end?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Just shoot.
And essentially. So, like, you know, they're spending all this money on school. Like, amongst my mom's friends
that
I went with, like, three
that's
of them
your
work
that's your
in
rent.
The...
All right.
Pardon?
Fix the shit, dude, Rama.
Oh, that is that's me. Okay, wait. I'm just going to switch to
there
my
you go.
Mic. Is it working?
Yep.
Okay.
I know what
wait.
You just did.
I think this is good. Like, this is going to be a better fix.
Hello? Is this better?
Oh, God, no. That's far, far worse.
That's the worst. Okay.
All right. This sets the bar for how this is as good as it's gonna get in this podcast. I think we should accept that.
Hopefully, Thermal thing can edit this shit.
Yeah.
Can Noob just briefly before going into the story describe what his mic setup is? The audio quality that I have to deal with editing.
So my mic setup hasn't changed since we started recording the Lincoln Cast. It's I have two mics. One is a desktop mic that's snapped in half, and it's just like. Sort of the microphone part is just on like my table, like not standing up. And this is like 7 years old. It's like a Logitech. It was $10 when I bought it 7 years ago. That's just the case of it. And then my other is like a Razer headset that's 3 years old. Essentially, if I touch like the input, like the connector on it, it goes crazy, as you may have just heard.
Yeah.
And those are that's my setup.
So that's actually so that's a plug that goes into your PC, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it is slightly crackly, which probably happened because you hit your desk.
Give me a sec.
See if you can, tap it.
Hello?
Yeah, that works. Okay. Yeah. Now what I need you to do is stay away from your desk.
Okay, no, this is like on my desk. It's just my, I'm on like a desktop now, so it's fine.
Okay, all right, yeah. So now, now wrap, now's the story, go.
Okay, right, so just sort of like the difficult education system, and like people do praise like the East Asian thing to, you know, bring the countries out of poverty, you know, big part of the Chinese and South Korean, Singapore miracles, like societies that place very heavy value on education, but you know, at what cost and like whether or not this education is, you know, what is important in the 21st century and sort of like a workplace based on innovation and things like that, which is sort of why you don't see companies like Google or Apple or companies that sort of lead the way or create a new industry, sort of.
Right.
Or even just if you look at Nobel Peace or like Nobel Prize winners, you don't really see Nobel Prize winners coming out of China and Korea in terms of even like literature, science in those areas. Japan is starting to have a lot more recently and even throughout history. But I think especially in the mainland East Asian countries, like that sort of learning makes good doctors and lawyers and things like that, right. But doesn't necessarily have Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, etc.
Yeah. So essentially last week we talked about how crazy that was and how different it was to our systems. You also mentioned that other things did happen. So that was your Korean trip. That was the main takeaway from Korea, right?
Yes.
So what were your main takeaways from Japan?
Well, I mean, my main take, like the thing that's like etched into my brain is like the genitals of many naked Asian men in a hot spring.
What?
But that's the only thing that's like permanently stayed with me in my head is what I'm
saying. Wait.
What?
I need you to tell me about this whole Korea thing.
Okay. So I didn't visit Korea alone. It was mostly to see family. So I went with my mom. And so she booked a tour group to go to Japan. So it was six cities over 5 days. And one of the stops was, I forget what the city, it's like Beppu or something. It's known for its hot springs, right?
Yep.
And like in my tour group, aren't that many young people. It's mostly old people and children or like families, right? That come on tours like this. And I'll talk about like the idea of like a tour group later. But we stopped in the city and essentially this little town was entirely made up of a bunch of hot springs, like different hot springs, like hot spring bath places. And I guess it's like a big tourist town. So we just walked down the street and then you would just pick which hot springs you'd want to go in.
Weird.
Wait,
is this like fucking, all right, so is this like a large town or is this
like a very small
one street
town. Yeah, right. No, it's like a town, like from what I remember it, like we got off near the main highway and then we walked to this small town where it's just full of all these hot springs. And essentially, you know you didn't want too many people per hot spring, so each like five people went to each one. So I ended up going to like the all like a without knowing, we went into a mixed bath one, and we ran into, there was this Japanese woman. Nobody noticed until we actually went in, so she got out. And then it was just a bunch of Asian people, most half to 75% old people, just sitting naked in a hot spring.
So So your process was, hey, yeah, I'll just go to this hot spring, and I assume your mother wasn't with you because I'd be
no.
So you went into the hot spring.
Yeah.
You took off your kit.
Yeah. And then
only in a towel, walked in,
steamy hot springs. No towel.
Steamy hot spring. So yeah. What did it look like? Was it, is it just like a
No, it wasn't steamy
pool?
At all.
Did it look like a pool? Or?
No, it's sort of like rocks everywhere. So I got cuts on my bum. I fucking kid you not. On my ass cheeks, they're like small cuts.
Wait, so, oh. Well, okay. So it's a natural hot spring.
It's a natural hot spring. It feeds through, like, I don't know. I don't know the science of it, but the, like, volcanoes, etc. I also visited a volcano in Japan, which was cool. smelled like rotten eggs, but whatever.
Focus.
And yeah, so, you know, we sat around the hot springs. It was a really cool. I've never been to a hot spring. It was a very cool experience. And that night,
I didn't think it would be natural. I didn't think it would just open.
Oh no, they're all natural. It's the non-natural one would be just a public bath, which in Asia they have, where you just go into the bath with all these other men and
bathhouse,
just
sit there naked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
and essentially,
like so you like walk in and it's just this massive public.
Exactly.
Well, not
so,
public, but it's pool.
Yeah, it is very cool.
Then like, the women got out, and you were like, "Oh shit!" And then
I wasn't alone. Just want to make sure it wasn't like I was about to predate on this woman, who was also middle aged. Just
okay. Yeah, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
That she'd be older. I don't know.
Yes.
That strikes me as the hot spring demographic.
Yes. Also, like Japan, old people, right? And that night, essentially, we went from the mainland, like, I forget, is it Honshu or the main Japanese island, like the biggest one, to the southernmost one by boat. And on the boat, like, by ship, so like by ferry, and we slept over on the boat. And what was cool is I went to the showers on the ship, and it is literally a public bath. Like, the showers, there's no showers. It's there's like a giant bathtub. Like a big bath filled with all these, which was cool. I'd never seen something like that before.
Yeah, and, on a ship. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, on a ship, exactly. And then, you know, you had like, I was hoping it's a one-way glass, but just a window looking out of the ship and you could see all the lights in the distance of the cities. It was really cool, yeah.
Man.
So, like, I got fucking bombarded with images of naked Korean men, which is cool, yeah. That was most of my Japanese trip.
All right, so tell me about the geo-socio-political boundaries and dynamics of a tour
or something
group.
Like that. Okay, I guess one thing is sort of tour groups. So, like, all of the signs that I've encountered in Korea and Japan, airport, main cities, are offered in English and the native language and Japanese and Korean or Chinese, vice versa, right? So in Japan, signs were, on, you know, airports, for obvious reasons, there's English, Japanese, Korean, and Chinese. Certain road signs, major road signs, also had all four of those languages. Buses and public transportation offered all four of those languages, and tourist sites all offered all four of those languages, and you could find guides in all four of those languages in tourist sites. Same with Korea. You would find Japanese, Korean, Chinese, English on major road signs, on the train, like on the subway.
Holy shit.
Airports, it's insane how within this region is this shared, you know, like there's so much tourism that, you know, and business that you have those all four of those languages. Because even in Canada, I don't really see French outside of like packaging because on roads it's all English and things like that. And in Quebec, when you go to Quebec, it's mostly French. So it's sort of interesting to see all four of these languages, but it's also ironic because all of these countries hate each other and like are super xenophobic. Because like the discussions I would get into with these older Korean men is like, oh, those dirty Chinese, those evil Japanese, and those, you know, like conquering Americans. It's sort of all of these societies, despite, you know, you see these road signs and are so open for tourism, have such deep-bred hatred of each other. historical hatred. You know, Koreans, obviously, and Chinese hate the Japanese because of history. Koreans find Chinese poor and dirty. and the Japanese same way with the Koreans and Chinese. So it's this interesting dynamic of everyone hating each other because they're so close and there's so much money that goes around these countries that you have to, you know, play nice on the outside. And
it's crazy.
One of the crazy things is the amount of, I guess we would, you know, end up in tourist destinations, but just the amount of people in Japan, so many buses, so many tour buses filled with Korean and Chinese tourists that it's incredible how many people are visiting these countries per year. And the locals hate it. Like, when I was in Korea, you'd always see Chinese tour. You'd see, whenever you went to a mall, you would just see hundreds of Chinese people on group tours buying things. Because really? They love, you know, when you go out to other countries, you end up spending a lot of money. Yeah. And sort of, and locals always hate it. And, like, from the Korean perspective, it's like, oh, man, I can't believe they're letting, you know, all these Chinese tourists come in. But all the while, they're going in tour groups to Japan. So it's all of this, like, double-layered hypocrisy, hate of other people, while at the same time begrudgingly being like, oh, okay, I guess it gives this money. So it is really interesting to see.
So what's the makeup of your tour group? Was it all Koreans?
All Korean, yeah. It was a Korean tour person, and, you know, it was
right.
A fun trip, yeah. But it's interesting to see that xenophobia. Because, you know, you sort of hear it from Asian parents. Like, my parents are pretty xenophobic. They're not, I wouldn't say racist, but just fear and, like, ignorance of other cultures. And you see that at an extreme level in these countries. Because, again, like, I wouldn't say it's incredibly ethnically homogenous. Like, you would see white people on the train in Korea because, you know, what, like, more globalized, even education. People are coming to Korean universities, business and things like that. But just even then, people are so reactionary and scared of other cultures and find them, see them with, like, disdain. But that said, Japanese people are super polite, so it's fine. They don't speak English as well because I guess, like, English isn't that important to learn in the Japanese school system. But, like, if they don't know English, they'll try to find someone who knows English to help you. Which is really
Nice. So is that different to Korea? Is Korea high English speaking or
like it's well education wise? Like Korea values a lot on like learning. It's not useful English. Like I covered like last podcast. It's just like ridiculous stuff that you'll never actually learn. But it just there's a lot of English speaking. Like
I actually don't think you talked about that. What do you mean by ridiculous stuff? You
like wouldn't... like when you're studying like in your final year, you have to be good at all subjects, including English. Mm-hmm. Like to be able to get into a university. There's no being good at one thing and then focusing on that. It's you have to be an all-rounded sort of thing.
But are there English classes not particularly comprehensive? Like you didn't actually go into what their English classes.
Oh, so essentially English classes. My uncle is an English teacher and he showed me one of like the textbooks of the grade 12 curriculum. And it is literally just excerpts of them talking about like political things and like political controversies, things like that, and then it's like, please take this excerpt and describe what exactly what everyone's talking about. You know, shit you wouldn't need if you were just there's no, and that essentially teaches you how to like recognize things when reading and things like that.
Right.
But it doesn't like they don't learn how to speak English, how to write in English, like write you know well, or you know, they're learning very specific things. It's sort of like the rote learning and. It's not particularly helpful, I would say.
That's so weird compared to India. And, like, I'm going to say Indian background.
Like the amount, one of the biggest industry, like I mentioned, education. So many people from abroad are coming to teach English. And these people don't know how to speak Korean. Like at my uncle's school, a lot of the English teachers are from Canada and the United States. And they just teach it. But they don't know how to speak Korean. So how are you going to teach the kids? Like they don't speak English in class, right? And if you don't have that basic comprehension of English, like learning from someone who doesn't speak your language and teach it, like unable to teach it to you, what's the point? Which is,
and you're absolutely right. Like it's straight up without having that bridge between languages.
Exactly.
You can't possibly, you need that relation. You need that. This is equal to that. And without that, you just can't construct any form of sense from anything. Yeah. But no, what was it? I was just, compared to, cause I'm obviously Indian background.
Right.
Compared to, us, like it's kind of crazy. Like whenever I go to India, it's just like when I was young, right?
Yeah.
My parents tried to force me to learn my home tongue language.
Yeah.
So essentially, it was like every time I go to India, they'd put me in like these classes with my grandfather. Yeah. He'd like run things and try to get me to learn. I never learned. I was I'm terrible with languages. The only language I know is English, and I'm only
fine like, with that.
Yeah. I get by. On their part, though, like their like concern was that I would like not when I'd never be able to go travel India or anything like that, or I just like I wouldn't be able to get in touch with my like homeland, etc. But since then, I go back every 2 years. Since then, every time I go back, more and more people speak English to the point
Yeah,
now,
completely. Yes,
yeah, Now it's like everyone speaks English, and I don't need like
people can speak English at the basic level. That's what I'm saying. Like Koreans visiting Japan will speak English to them, like because it's the common understanding. Like there's there's not going to be that many Japanese who speak Korean and vice versa, right? So they'll speak English when they're Chinese tourists in Korea. They'll speak English to them. It is a very much an international language, and I don't.
I was
going to
say,
going away.
That the difference I'm pointing out is the English that a lot of people speak in India. Aside from like the like to cab drivers and stuff,
yeah.
But people like just shop owners and stuff in India is actually really good.
Oh,
like
wow.
Surprisingly, like surprisingly intelligible English. So the grammar might not be perfect, but they understand concepts. Yeah. It might be the fact that they're both Hindu-Arabic. Like, well, there's some form of relation between English and like that sect of languages. Right. That whole
like the order grammatically of Korean and English are opposite, so it's a bit difficult. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it might be part of it. It's interesting seeing that difference.
But it is, it was, I mean, it was a fun time. And I would definitely go back again if I had the chance.
Feel free to chime in at any time if you think of another story.
Right,
I love
it is just an incredible culture shock going to a country, even if it's like an advanced liberal democracy. You're still, the culture is so different because of historical reasons and just because it's a place in a different continent across the Pacific Ocean, I guess.
Yeah.
Filled with different colored people, with colors, with those Orientals. Jesus.
I you know what? You do immediately know when you go overseas to one of those countries, you anywhere in the East, really, you immediately know that you're not in a Western country just by like simple things. Like, well, for me, one of the major problems I had with India in the past, and it's getting better, is that everything would be covered with this like fine layer of brown dirt. Like, it's not like their fault. It's literally like the soil there is loose, so it blows in the wind.
Right.
So that covers everything. So like you get like, but then as they build up, obviously, and cities get larger, more areas covered by concrete, it becomes less of a problem in the centers of cities. But in the small towns and stuff, you still have that, but that clashes. Like, you have all this brown because it's covered in this brown dust, but that clashes with just how much color is in everything. Like, they are far more connected with bright colors in advertising, in like just like basic, like a sign here would be white with black, like lettering, right? But there it would be specifically like yellow with green or something, like some interesting or weird combination of stuff. I'm actually a fan of more muted color schemes, so it's not like I love it, but it's interesting to see the difference. Is Korea, etc., the same? I know Japan's very neon, or
there is a lot of neon. They like flashing lights. But I think color-wise, I did not look out for it, so I can't say I personally noticed anything. But lots of Dunkin' Donuts.
Probably means it's more muted.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, if you didn't notice much, it actually probably means that Korea is a bit more muted. Which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
I actually like seeing that difference between countries. Anyway.
Yeah. I guess I have one more thing that's like minor. That's not that minor. But I guess like seeing soldiers in uniform everywhere. That's big, I guess.
Where?
In Korea.
Korea? Yeah. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's conscription.
I actually forgot that about Korea. Yeah. So Korea's
two-year service. And when I went, there was this big uproar. There was a Korean soldier who the military, when you, at a certain age, I think 18 or 19, you have to serve 2 years in the Korean military by law. Yeah. And there's no extra, like, there's deferment on education and things like that. But there is no option. There's no, like, oh, I'm going to work volunteer for you. You have to do it. And essentially, it's sort of, there's a bad culture of hazing, you know, recruits and things like that. Essentially, one guy got pushed too far, which is weird because he wasn't a recruit, but he was 3 months from being discharged. He went nuts. He killed, I think, five other soldiers. And then there was like a standoff near the DMZ, which I went to, which was cool.
Jeez.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, coming from, I guess you might see it in somewhere like Israel, or maybe definitely more in the United States, I bet. But Canada, it's very rare to see a soldier in uniform. On every subway carriage, there's at least one or two guys in uniform going back to the front. Yeah, it's cool.
Crazy. Wait, so how do you say it's conscription? Is that a specific age range that you have to be?
I think it's from 19 to 26, 18 to 26. And it's
so any time within
Oh, it's 18 months. Yeah, any time within that, I believe. I'm not completely sure.
Okay, so it's not like you turn 18, then you go to the military for 2 months.
Yep.
Sorry, 2 years.
18 months, yeah.
That's interesting. Wait, so So essentially, because of that, you have a very large but very young military. Well, I guess you'd have a lot of people staying. You'd have a lot of people like liking the
life. Did I mention just sort of like how different in terms of like the workforce ages? Did I mention that? Like,
yeah, you mentioned that.
People. Yeah, and I think that also falls to police. Because again, like Asian people are a lot taller than they were, let's say 40 years ago, like in our parents' generation, because they eat better, obviously, but they're still very slender. And it is weird seeing all these skinny, young Asian policemen that look like university students, because like, I guess there were a bunch of union riots or union protests going on, and these police come in these truckloads of, or like big buses, like tour bus size. They just get out and then they just stand there with their like reflective vests on, and they look, they don't look threatening at all. I couldn't imagine like them stopping riots, for example.
Jeez.
And that's, even the soldiers so cool. look just like regular dudes. They're not particularly buff, they're just slender, and it's just the uniform that really could tell the difference, and maybe the short hair. Yeah,
that's you know what? That actually kind of is kind of funny, because I'm used to like policemen, at least over here. I'm sure.
Oh, sure, they're very big. Simple. They're very big. Not like big fat, dudes, but like big dudes, muscular wise, things like that.
Yeah, usually, or at least like fit looking. They're not.
Yes.
I can't. It's very rare that I see a policeman that
just
looks
like a lanky dude. Slender. Yeah.
Yeah, very rare. It's usually they usually have some muscle mass to them. So it's kind of cool, and that's actually survival. That's partially a survival thing. Like. Being the military myself, I know that in some situations, you definitely want to bulk up, even to just give the physical appearance of being intimidating, because it actually helps in many like situations. Right. Like it's very cool seeing that cultural difference, especially since you have like, – is there a reason? Like, do a lot of people go from military into police force? Is that like the reason there's a lot of
I think – well, I'm not completely sure, because if everyone's in the military, there's no inherent advantage other than maybe if you were an officer of being like – so. Most people, like everyone around you, even if they look just like the skinniest, most slender, like music pop stars, things like that, they've been in the military, right? So it's sort of, I guess there's no real reason to bulk up, because there's no real culture of sort of, it doesn't, I don't really, you don't really see that many bulky Asian guys, I guess.
So wait, but when you say they've been in the military, do they go through, so, all right, can you go in as an officer,
training,
or
and then
do you just go
to the DMZ?
Okay, right.
Yeah, but like, as active duty troops,
So, but that's what I mean. So do they go in as troops, or do they go in as officers?
They're in as soldiers.
Is there a way to like go in as one rather than the other?
What do you mean?
So, for example, I'm a direct entry officer, right?
Right. Oh.
So I didn't go through recruits.
I believe it's just because my dad was also, what is it called? Had officer, was an officer in the military, but it's like very like difficult to be an officer in the military. Obviously, if you have everyone in the military, officerships end up being particularly valuable. But my dad had completed his master's degree before entrance into the military, and apparently that helped. Also, what is it called? My dad didn't serve as like a frontline infantry officer. He served as a public relations officer, which was nice, but he had to serve longer. Essentially, there's various different places you can obviously serve: Air Force, Navy, Army, and then Marines. Marines and Air Force, I believe, are 24-month terms, or it might be just a bit longer. So there are various options, but I know for a fact, like getting into the military academy, at least here, getting into the RMC is just you're relatively physically fit and you're not an idiot, and then you can get into is it the same there? I believe.
Here it's
I mean, it is competitive. Like, a lot of people get cut, but I'm saying like there, like you can't, apparently, I don't know if this is true, but if you have bad eyesight, like flat feet, they won't accept you for physical lack, because a career in a military where there's so many people, I guess, is a lot better than a small, you know, advanced country's army.
Yeah, exactly. For us, we have a very small armed force, so essentially it is, and it's kept that way for many reasons.
Right.
But it is kept that way. It's kept small for a reason. So essentially, to be an officer, it's actually like getting like just a fucking job. So you have to go through multiple interviews, multiple tests, multiple physical tests, and that kind of stuff just to get in the door. Yeah. So it is like this extended like year long recruitment process to actually become an officer. And I assume like, that's actually kind of interesting, seeing that their military culture is the point where a lot of people go through as rookies, but then a lot of people go through as officers as well. Or some people go through office as officers as well. It's actually, it would be an interesting and very different life being raised there. Yep. Like every time we bring this up, which is
yeah, it would suck. My dad often tells me, like, be lucky you're not in that country, because I can't imagine what sort of shitty minimum wage job you'd have right now.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's our foreign,
look into the world.
Traveling the world, yeah. Moment for this podcast. Again, if you have any interesting stories, just feel free to pipe up with them.
Okay. I'll spread these out, but not constantly so much.
It takes you a while to remember some of them, so just like, spring them up when you feel like it. But we're going to move on to other things we've been doing that are not video games before we get to video games. Okay. So what have you been up to, Noob?
Man, I have given my soul away for $15 a month.
Okay. Before we get to that game, is there anything else you've done? Anything else?
That for game me, has been what I've... Things have not happened because of that game.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. On my part, I have been reading a shitload.
Oh, as opposed to what have you been reading?
Specifically, okay. So you know me. I don't read interesting / boring political, like, any form of documentation. I don't really care about real world stuff.
Yeah.
I only really read two genres, that's sci-fi and fantasy, right?
Yes.
The latest sci-fi I've been reading is a series called Star Force, which is a terrible name.
Star Force!
It's a terrible fucking name. I looked at it and I've actually heard of this series for about six, seven years, but I'd never read it because of that fucking name. Like, I look at it and they have the worst covers. Like, the covers for it look like they've been...
What is it?
All right, so they... Imagine the first cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if the first cover for the first book, like, imagine if the author went to his friend who is studying C++ and had just gotten into how to design any form of 3D graphics and went, oh man, wouldn't it be cool if I had like a space marine looking dude on the cover of my novel? And he went to his friend and asked him to do it. And the guy pumped out like this 80s, like early 90s looking fucking like first foray into 3D animation looking fucking space marine and just slapped it on the fucking cover.
I need to attach a picture to this because this sounds amazing. I'm thinking just like in huge font, just Star Force.
Oh man, yeah, no way I can. I should just Google Star Force and see Star. I'm actually going to take this moment because I love this force. It's actually hard to find because obviously Star Wars.
Oh, God, this font.
Oh, my God. All right. So link me to the image you found. And I'll tell you if it's it.
Okay, wait, this is audible.
Let's see.
This looks like, like a cinematic from Age of Empires 2. If it took
place in the future. Yeah, no, you didn't need, I'm not sure if you've actually found it. I'm not sure if you're
actually
found
it.
Let me look. Yeah, that's it. See what I mean? Just like this shitty 3D
animation.
I can
already imagine just what this character would look like in motion and just the weird...
Guys, this is great audio content, just letting you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm happy for people at home to Google it themselves.
Yeah, Star Force. B.V. Larson.
Yeah, essentially by B.V. Larson, yeah. So I've... And this is the second book. This anime, that actually looks way better than the first book's cover.
Is the first book the guy crossing his arm? Oh no, it's the dude with the helmet, right?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, so thank you, producer, for trying. You're totally right. but I forgot it wasn't just me chatting to Noob.
Yes.
For an hour. So essentially, those covers were the primary reason why I never fucking went near that series for six to 7 years. It's been quite a while because they did such a terrible job. But I finally picked it up because I had nothing else to really do. And I was like putting together my PC and a bunch of other stuff. So I needed something to listen to on like long drives and that kind of shit, right? So it is actually surprisingly good. Like the series, the concept of the first book, which is the hook of the series really, is that everything's going normal and then aliens attack. Right. So that's obviously basic normal sci-fi concept, right? But the idea is... they are these automated ships that fly over Earth and essentially kidnap people with these arms. So essentially, like, these arms reach down from these ships and just, like, pluck people out of their bedrooms and shit and lift them up into the ships. And then those people are found, like, as crumpled forms elsewhere. And that's essentially all these ships are doing. And everyone's really, like, shocked and pretty much don't know what the fuck to do because they can't shoot them down. The technology of these ships are far more advanced than we have. They have great CAT AA and all that kind of stuff. So essentially, there's this, like, continual process of these ships roaming the Earth, like, essentially abducting people. And finally, the main character gets abducted. And it turns out that what they do is when you get inside is they actually submit you to a number of tests. And those tests are, like, they judge your guile, your leadership capability, your ability to react on the spot and that kind of stuff. So that happens, and it turns out, and this is essentially the hook of the series, that what the ships are actually doing are they're pretty much an automated system that's been sent to your world by another race to give your world this technology, like these new ships, etc. Right. And the people they're abducting, they're actually trying to find command personnel for those ships.
Oh.
And those ships are essentially what you're being given to fight off this other threat. And this other threat is coming. So essentially, it's a pretty cool kind of thing where the main character is actually a computer programmer. He's an ex-army dude. He was part-time army and then came out, then started teaching at the university. And now he's as a computer programmer dude. Right. And so you have this interesting confluence of the people who are selected by these ships are generally just complete fucking assholes because they're the guys who are used to like reacting the fly, killing without any note, like any second thought, etc. Like just being really like visceral and animalistic. The only reason he survived is because he had his shotgun with him when it took him. So that means essentially the people who these ships have selected to save the world are just complete fucking dickheads. Right? And so, but he's relatively normal. So he's like this one smart dude surrounded by these like freaking murderers and shit.
Right.
And he essentially has to like work with them to save the world and also find a way to get technology from these ships and allow Earth to defend itself rather than relying on these like relatively okay ships. That's the base of the series. And the series goes from there into like intergalactic space opera kind of stuff. And it actually gets really interesting. And I'm about to read the last book, which is book 9 of the first series.
So do not judge the book by its cover.
Do not judge the book by cover. It's actually very interesting. It's not the best series I've ever read. And sci-fi wise, I'd probably still say The Lost Fleet is probably one of my favorites. But yeah, Star Force, not bad. And fucking that name.
Star Force. What is the name relevant to the story at all?
So essentially the idea is one of the people who are like murderous bastards, thugs, whatever, that gets abducted by these ships, starts organizing all the ships and turns out he's ex-Navy. So obviously you have the armed forces, so you have the Air Force, you have the naval forces, and then so he names the Star Force, essentially the Earth's fourth force. To protect her. But so the idea is, okay, that kind of makes sense. I can see where you're deriving the terminology.
Including, so the cover is also relevant, you would say.
It actually becomes more relevant with time. Like you actually start noticing stuff on the cover.
Does the story get better if you imagine the characters on the cover?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Oh my God. Those covers. Anyway. So yeah,
90s video game cinematics.
Jesus Christ, I was right, right? It's like
I can just imagine just like the slow moving characters. Oh, awful! Everyone needs to see this just to understand.
Yeah, so Google Star Force Goodreads. At least that way you'll find the book, and you'll find the images from there.
It sounds very interesting, though.
Yeah, it's actually really cool. So that's the majority of what I'm doing. Aside from that, I've just been like continuing to like overclock and other stuff, like my computer and doing that kind of stuff. That's essentially been most of my week. So Nooborama, finally, yes. You get to talk about the one thing you've been doing.
I guess I don't know how to like, preface this. Like,
you were in school holidays, right?
Yeah.
Oh no, not holidays. You finished high school.
I finished. Like, I'm going into university next year. And
yeah. So you got like 5 months or whatever of free time.
Yeah, 2 months. Well, 1 month because I was off in Asia. But yeah.
So essentially what most people would be doing with that month of free time, and you can probably agree with me in this part, is going out, seeing friends, seeing family.
I have been doing that. Let me set this clear. Like this month, like almost every day of the week, I've been spending my parents' precious cash on buying lunch, dinner, and watching movies.
With friends.
Yeah, with friends, and not alone.
Et cetera. Yeah.
Yes. But and essentially, you know, like I've been playing video games, but I've been, you know, just doing like Hearts of Iron and things like that. Stuff that I normally do. I haven't been playing Guild Wars. Because on the Mumble, on the PC Gaming Hub, people started playing this game. I'm sure many of you would know, many of the five people listening, that there was this game called Star Wars The Old Republic, made by BioWare.
You didn't have to give it that. You've been playing SWTOR.
I've been playing SWTOR. And I have been playing a lot of SWTOR. When people told me to play it, I'm like, man, that game I heard is fucking shit. Like, I don't want to waste my unlimited bandwidth to download that shitty game. And I downloaded it, and I'm like, this is like, what the Star Wars? What am I? 20? What? No, 12? And I played it, and within 2 hours, I had subscribed for $15 a month. I had spent... And by the end of the first day, I'd spent $20 on cartel coins to buy things. And then by the end of the second day, I had spent about $45 in total on this free-to-play game that I scoffed at. And it's gotten to the point that this week I've canceled 3 times, like, plans, like lunch. 3 lunches. That's what I canceled so I could play this fucking video game. And I don't feel guilty at all. Whatever.
So I like Star Wars. I like Star Wars. Most people like Star Wars. Star Wars is awesome, right? We can all agree with that. Except for Jeff. He's a monster. And he also thinks Terminator 1 is better than Terminator 2. He's wrong. He's wrong about many things. But Star Wars itself, the extended fiction has never particularly interested me, except for like little things like, okay, General Grievous is a total badass. I want to know more about General Grievous. Or
Padme.
Don't even.
Jar Jar Binks.
Awesome.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. And like they're interesting, like what happens to Luke's kids and all that stuff. I previously
which
have
you can looked, find out in the new Disney Star Wars.
Oh God. No, you're right. You're right. And it could be interesting. I don't know. You never know. But because of that, I wouldn't notice that having looked at the extended fiction in little drips and drabs by that process of slow accretion of time. I know that a lot of it is really good, but the vast majority of it is fucking terrible, right?
Okay, but what do you feel about video game Star Wars fiction in BioWare sense? KOTOR? KOTOR 2.
I only played KOTOR 2, and I only played like the first maybe 2 hours of it. It was more of the fact that back then PC games didn't have good control support. I know it was first person, I think. Right. Memory is first person.
No, it was third person.
Third person? Yeah. Okay. So I remember there being a platforming section, and I was like, fuck this. I never went near it again.
Right.
I suspect that if they rejiggered that game to have good like controller support, I'd probably really like it.
Yeah.
But because of that, I never got into it. So I don't know. Like all I know about Star Wars is extended fiction in the core. So when I saw that BioWare made SWTOR and I saw the reviews, I was like, okay, I'll never touch that.
I mean, okay, let me tell you like the perspective I came from is sort of, I've heard things about KOTOR, especially from some people who played it, like they were super dedicated into it and then sort of there was no endgame content so they fucked off. And then there was a second group of people who came in during the free-to-play period and some people who stayed from the original period and sort of got hooked on the continual content that was coming from BioWare fixing the end game, and they ended up subscribing. And then just recently, my friend started playing SWTOR free to play. And I'm like, okay, you know what? I don't have that, you know, like I might as well spend my last week playing a game for like maybe 2 hours a day. Maybe. Right. Okay. But what had ended up happening is I played KOTOR 1. I've played a bit of KOTOR 2. I don't really care about the story of the game, but instead I think, or story of the world, the universe. But instead, mm-hmm. what I ended up being invested in was like a BioWare game. I was invested in the character's very story.
Right.
And I think if you come into this game, don't expect it to be Mass Effect, but at the same time, do have the expectations of what you like in a BioWare game. If what you like in a BioWare game is the dialogue, the characters, I think you would like this game. Because I think, generally speaking, overall, the overall story in BioWare games, I say, is weak. Yep. Would you agree with me like on that? It's more the characters that make BioWare games that much
better. I think the only story BioWare nailed was, in terms of the actual story itself, not the characters, just the story itself, was Mass Effect 1.
Yeah.
Where, with the massive escalation and finding out what the collectors were, not the collectors, like all the Reapers were, not Mass Effect.
Right.
That was amazing. Yes. But as they proved with Mass Effect 2, their ability to write characters is second to none. And that's why Mass Effect 2 is the best game they've made.
And I think someone put it that it's sort of like, I don't think this is necessarily true, but it's, if you like KOTOR and if you like the characters and sort of the NPCs that existed and the stories that existed in the KOTOR games, you may very well like this game. It won't be a very good KOTOR sequel, but it's a very good Star Wars game. It's a very good MMO. And the way that I like to personally play MMOs is I love the idea that there are people, like there's people running around, there's people doing stuff. But I don't like playing with people in MMOs unless it's like a dungeon or like a speed clear, right?
Right.
So it's perfect in that sense. The sad thing is like the plan. I don't know about. I think I think they released numbers something like there's 1 million active users a month or something like that. Active subscribers or something like that recently. Came with the Strongholds update, which added player housing, You know, it's a planet system, so you land on a planet, and then this planet, there's like a big area on the planet you get to roam around, and within a planet there'll be how many number of people. And I think I've only seen really like 200 people per planet. That's the maximum I've seen so far, but I've yet to play on a weekend. So I'm not sure about the numbers, but if you're looking for like a weird single player experience in an MMO, I would personally say I've already gotten the $45 worth of enjoyment from that game that I've played so far.
So which class and race?
I've been playing the Imperial Agent as a human.
And essentially, that actually, I heard that was the single best story.
I guess, because I just finished the first chapters. There's 3 chapters for the personal story. And it was insanely good. The ending of that chapter was fantastic. I think it's the best BioWare sort of like story experience that I've ever had. I maybe like I'm not looking back well enough, but it just how everything culminated in the end and the options your player had in terms of, apparently it doesn't really change much because it's the limits of an MMO, which I'll get to, which is my problem with the game. Sort of the choices your character is given near the end is something I would have never expected from an MMO. Sort of it's the perfect merge. It's as good as it gets in terms of merging the story side of BioWare and like the aspects and like what you can do within an MMO. And I think sort of the characters and the story, I actually have never been so invested in a non like RPG in those things.
Non-single player RPG. That's actually really cool. And so the ones I heard were really fantastic were the Imperial Agent and the Stormtrooper, I think were the two.
Yeah. So like the Imperial Agent was the one I played. I don't know about the other classes, but you know, if you role play it, not like proper role play, but just like, you know, have an actual character rather than just like, don't treat this as just a normal game, normal MMO where you just go around and the point is leveling. I think if you treat it more as a story experience and as like the RPG aspect of the MMO, because it's other MMOs, you simply are an observer in the story in the sense that you don't necessarily get to make choices. But in this game, there are a lot of, and you can actually personally mold your character into someone evil, someone in the middle, someone good, and sort of, there's so many different things you can do with your character that ultimately don't necessarily pay off because A, it's a BioWare game, and B, it's an MMO.
That's cool. Like, it's if you were to point to, if you were to give like a basic example of like a moment in this that sold you on the story of this.
I guess I'll talk about like the one that I enjoyed the most, which is the, I guess the very ending would be too much.
Let's just give you a
quest, like a side quest, not a main quest. Each planet has a quest where you're helping the Empire fight off, you know, essentially the base story of it is currently the Empire have returned after hundreds of or centuries of banishment after some big galactic war. And there's like an uneven, and they beat the Republic during like a surprise attack on Coruscant, crippling the Jedi and forcing a peace upon the Republic.
Essentially, so this is after like the movies or before the movies?
This is after KOTOR, so like like thousands of years before the movies.
Before the movies, okay.
Yes. And essentially, it's sort of this uneasy cold war between the two powers. And essentially, as the agent, you're scurrying up favor in planets. So your first mission is you're an agent in Hutta, the home planet of the Hutts. And essentially, you're trying to get the cartels to work with the Empire and against the Republic. And you're sent on these various missions trying to curry favor with the locals to side them on the Republic, help support the Republic occupying forces and planets, funding rebels to fight the, you know, the government supporting the Republic, etc. And it's very interesting. You know, characters are things you can expect from a BioWare game. They're unique. They're interesting. There's dialogue that goes off in the side that you'll just walk around and hear that's quite hilarious, like funny things. And I guess one is I personally play it as a very dark character. So I'm just going around killing people mercilessly in story dialogue. So imagine it. I'd say you're far more evil in this game. Like the ability is you can be far more evil in this game than in any of the BioWare games, I would say. the sky is the limit. Like you're killing like innocent people, like just through dialogue options. You can just craft things like, you know, if someone's family member betrayed you, you can like murder the entire family and turn it into a hive for like Killix, which are sort of like bug people.
Jesus Christ.
Just like really funny stuff, funny dialogue, witty dialogue, obviously because there's simply so much stuff that needs to be covered in an MMO. Some of the dialogue is reused, which is one of my pet peeves with that game. But I mean, that ultimately doesn't detract from the, I guess, I don't know how to phrase it. I guess in terms of your character's unique story. Like, I think there's so many different ways you can play your character that is not available in an MMO. Even in story-rich MMOs like The Secret World or very much Guild Wars, you ultimately don't have a chance to shape your character's personality because you are simply just watching your character interact with other people compared to doing the interaction yourself. And I think that's the major difference. And playing as like that story-oriented game makes it such a more rewarding experience. But at the same time, because it's an MMO, you'll rarely see the consequences of your actions, and there's a limit to what you can do as an MMO. And I think that's the problem, is they should have
Let's move on to your gripes with the game, or your few gripes with the game. Go ahead. I mean, just unload.
It's also the same problem I think I faced with Secret World, and I think it would have been a much better single-player game, but I can see how that would not have been possible because the amount of work that went into this game is tremendous. That if there wasn't like that payoff every month, I don't know how this game could have been made. Because this game is still making money, which is good. And I'm glad to see it. But apparently like the gripes that I have yet to experience are end game content is they finally added it, but it is like devoid of the personal story parts that people really love. Because it is hard, I just assume, to get those voice actors back and things like that. Continue building these, you know, story quests. But that's not something I'm particularly looking for. I heard it falls off very much after the first chapters for a lot of characters, which is not good because I just finished my first chapter. so I'll report back with what actually happens.
I'm pretty sure the Imperial Agent stays pretty good. Like, that's what I've heard.
So like I don't think BioWare is very experienced in looking at MMOs because I cannot imagine playing this game with so many people. Because having just one other person running around in my general area is an incredibly big annoyance when you're doing a quest. Because let's say your quest is to destroy this barrel. If someone else destroys it, it's gone. You have to go find another barrel to destroy.
Oh,
that's sort of like, it's it's not instanced. Items are not instanced right. in the game. So if you have to destroy or like edit something, there's like a 30-second to 1 minute wait time to see that restart.
Right.
So there are these weird things that like this game, oh man, I wish this wasn't an MMO, because I like the idea that, you know, to see, it would be good to see the, you know, like populated streets and things like that, that are just, you know, idle NPCs. That would be great in terms of like, that's why I sort of wished I could, you know, my subscription went to hiring people to pretend to be NPCs. That'd be really cool. There are role play servers. There are role play servers. I don't want to get involved in that stuff, but they do exist. But yeah, I think the MMO ultimately is like a limitation on what that game can be. And but at the same time, it's the fact that it's an MMO that it's allowed to be so expansive, covering so many different planets. And I think it's good that they're constantly updating the game, like the Stronghold update, which just came out the day after I subscribed, you know, added a planet from KOTOR Manan, the water planet, for any of you who remember. And and like the idea of player housing. So this game is still supported, but, you know, problems like that, problems with, you know, combat just being standard MMO, like it's not particularly unique.
Right.
I have yet to experience like the major, pardon?
Is it active combat like Guild Wars, or is it more like WoW?
Well, the problem is my personal character, like the agent, is it's a DPS class, but at the same time, one of its unique abilities is you have to be in cover to fire weapons, compared to, like, you still move around to dodge AoE attacks and things like that.
Right.
But it's not nearly at the point of Guild Wars.
Okay.
But yeah, I think the nice thing about this game is there's a lot more skills to be able to use, unlike Guild Wars. But then again, like most MMOs, there's, you know, the most efficient what you should be using.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Well, is that your Star Wars minute, or is there anything else?
Yes, that was that. Like, if it's, I would recommend if you're going to play it to subscribe, because, like, immediately the benefits of subscription are clear. You can experience all of the story content 100% without the subscription, but just moving around, the benefit of just convenience. I can't imagine not being able to have a mount before level or after level 20, because I think the subscriber mounts you can get starting level 15, but you have to be level 25 in the actual game. But there are areas that are so vast that walking around would be doubling my gameplay time unnecessarily.
Right. So that's kind of perks, because that's the only real thing is like the idea of a BioWare story. That sounds awesome, because I haven't had a BioWare story in my life since, again, like Mass Effect.
I don't think you should have the expectations of Mass Effect or KOTOR. Not what you should come in with, but you should come in with an actually engaging story that if you play it as like an RPG, you will thoroughly enjoy.
Which is, I love. Like, I haven't had like, when I said a BioWare story, I mean, I kind of meant like a good video game, Western RPG kind of idea.
Yes,
story.
I would agree it is that. I think I haven't enjoyed a game story or been invested, at least in my agent character, that much since a BioWare game, I would say.
Right. And it's kind of close. Like I said, like, for example, there's games I've played more recently that probably would have a better story, like, for example, To the Moon or The Last of Us or something like that. But that specific genre, like, the Western RPG genre is a very particular thing of like sensibilities, and that, like as you said, like the ability to be really evil, that sense of humor, and that like ingrained choice. I think it was the one part that you haven't touched on yet. It was your gripes about choice or the lack of
role. Right. So
what
I think
say?
The again, like the problem of it being an MMO is you'll never see the consequences of your choices, and in later chapters they'll almost be ignored because just there's too many divergent paths to take in an MMO that it would simply be impossible. If they could focus on one class, one story, there would be so many different ways to play that story. But at the same time, there are 8 different classes, right? Each with its own personal class story, which makes it difficult. So you will see, like, you know, you'll murder this character or something like that. But generally speaking, they'll just restrict the zone from coming up again, so you won't be able to enter the zone where you killed them. But at the same time, I don't think I can name an example of it, because I'm not sure if it's actually happened, but I'm sure there are moments where it's like, hey, wait, didn't I destroy this place? I killed this guy, and things like that. And like in the agent story, you can make a choice that kills millions of people, but you'll never see it.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the sense that like, you'll generally never see that in a BioWare game either, because, again, like, if you kill someone, you're never supposed to encounter them anyways. It just it gives you the negative karma. So the question is, like, ultimately, BioWare stories are not that open-ended. There's different ways you can proceed in the story, but the end state is always the same. And I think that's the same in KOTOR, where you can control the means to the end, but you can't control the end goal itself of the game.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a problem that games are going to have for a very long time.
Yes.
If anything, fiction in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's also another like part I'd like to highlight is these choice-based architecture and storytelling. This is, aside from fucking choose your own adventure books, this is literally the only place you can get a good version of that, which is another reason it's exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I just wish.
So.
Yeah. This, if they maybe focused the story. Then again, it is nice to have a unique story for every character that increases the longevity of the game. And it really.
There's literally eight times more game
than exactly.
there would be otherwise. Yeah. You know, that's really cool. And again, like, this is something that's come up a couple times. I think Durin got into this a while ago, and he said pretty much very similar things. The story is a massive draw for SWTOR, and I might actually give it a shot at some point. When I can bother downloading it, sounds like
it's good. 20 gigabytes. It's not enormous.
Yeah. That's enormous. That's most of my download cap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, like, one other thing is I haven't played it, but I sort of want to, but I can't anymore because I'm paying a subscription for this game and I have to fucking play the shit out of it before. Yeah, but apparently Arcage is amazing, is what I've heard from people who are in the beta. They, like, one story I heard is there's a guy who apparently, what is it called? Like, apparently, like, stole something from, like, a trade transaction from another player. So everyone in chat just made, like, a flash mob jury, and then certain players pretended to be the jury. Like, there was, like, a play. I don't know exactly what happened, whether it was, like, you know, done by, like, a GM or something. And, like, the jury decided he was guilty, so he got sent to, like, a prison for an hour.
Crazy.
That's insane. I would like to see that.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Arcade seems to be an interesting, like, weird MMO. But, yeah.
So let's move on from talking about all the people who play that we haven't actually personally experienced ourselves.
Exactly.
To news. So...
What's new?
I said, it's a good episode this week because nice and short, because we don't really have much news to talk about. Right. Essentially, there's only two real things. Let me just make sure. No, okay. So, all right. We need to put this out there first and foremost. We will not talk about Zoe Quinn and that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And we will not talk about
Sully, our podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
With those despicable characters.
Stop it. I will not talk about Phil Fish and his thing, aside from to say, hey, shit thing to do, don't like Phil Fish anyway. That's how both of our stats. Yeah. I'm happy to say that.
Who cares? Who cares, Phil Fish? Phil Fish more like Phil smells like fish. Okay.
I hate you.
Sick bird.
So, yeah. So, aside from that, those are the two major pieces of news. The news that we actually found interesting because only because it sparked a conversation between us and was the only thing that I saw that would spark a conversation between us was the fact that The Witcher 3, and it sounds really dumb. It sounds really dumb. is not going to be 1080p 60 on consoles going forward, or probably not going to be 1080p 60. Unconfirmed. But that not going to be 1080p60, but that's the idea from IGN, and that is unsurprising to anyone because, like, whatever, it's The Witcher 3, it's a freaking PC game at its core. But at any form of console war things aside, what actually came up was me and Noob talking about 1080p60.
Yeah.
And we actually haven't talked about that on the podcast before.
No.
And we've never actually, me and Shinboy have had frequent discussions about alternating opinions, but let's actually have a short conversation about frame rates and image quality in video games and what our preferences are and what the two sides of the story are and why anyone would give a shit, right?
Right.
Noob-a-rama.
Mm-hmm. Wait, we should lay it out first that you're going to be playing Devil's Advocate. Because you don't believe in it either about the 60.
Okay. Before we do that, like, what is your stance on video games frame rates and image quality.
Personally, image quality is more, as long as you're not getting unplayable frame rates. If you're getting playable 30, which is what I would consider a playable frame rate for something like a non-multiplayer first-person shooter or an RPG, is very playable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think image quality at that 1080p and 720 makes an enormous difference, especially if you have a much bigger screen, which is what console gamers would be playing on.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously distance from screen, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So from your stance, essentially, you're an image quality guy, as long as the frame rate is 30 and locked at 30.
And I've been playing games for a lot of my life where I would be lucky to get 20 frames per second. So, like, not a big deal if you get 30. Holy shit, I'm getting 30 FPS in this amazing looking game at 1080p. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, I actually think that is a core conceit of what people have with this. Essentially, my stance is, I've said many times in the podcast before, I actually don't really care about frame rates almost in general. It's more of a case of, does the game look good? And by look good, I don't even mean just purely graphics. I mean, if it looks good, this is the same argument of Giant Bomb having only a best looking game category as opposed to most technical and all that kind of stuff. Because it doesn't necessarily have to be the particular resolution of the textures that make a game look good. If a game looks good, and when a game looks good, you know it looks good because it immediately catches your eye. That's enough for me. And it doesn't matter what frame rate it's running at, doesn't matter what resolution it's running at. There are some freaking PS1 games that still, in inverted commas, look good. Mm-hmm. There's one of my favorite looking games of recent times is Ghost Trick on the DS. And everyone knows DS is fuck all in terms of graphics. But Ghost Trick looks really fucking sharp. And that's my stance on it. So if a game looks good because it's running at 60 and fucking is, especially for racing games, is absolutely like Twitch perfect in terms of your movement translating to what's happening on screen, that can be the factor that means something to me. But that's not every game, and I don't think it's probably not
going to be The Witcher.
Yeah, and I don't think it's fair to have that like one stance on everything, which is everything must be 1080p 60. I don't think that makes any sense whatsoever. But anyway,
and I think especially coming from someone, I don't personally play that many console games, it's sort of like you're not, it's not something that's been, maybe PC gamers could, like elitist PC gamers could be like, oh, if it's not 60 FPS, 1080p, I don't care. But it's something that they've been used to, like console 60 FPS, 1080p, that's such a new thing.
Yeah.
That's not, that has yet to be, I don't even think it's a standard currently, is it? For the
it's not even a standard.
Generation. Yeah.
It's not a standard. It's literally people want it, but it's,
so I think
games
like,
at the moment are running at like 900p. Yeah.
Exactly. So, I don't know. It's sort of, it's not a step down, so I don't think it's that big of a deal.
So I was saying before, so the major argument, size of the argument here is obviously image quality versus frame rate. And let's pose the basic questions here. Just to clarify our positions, if at all. So, Noobarama, if you could have a game running at 1080p 30 or 720p 60, which would you take?
1080p 30.
Yeah. And your reasoning is?
Because image, like 30 FPS, it's not even necessarily the image quality better, but like the 60 to 30, I would scarcely notice.
Right.
And like when I play certain games at 60 and I play certain games at 30, like if I'm playing a highly intensive like multiplayer shooter, maybe I would start caring about the frames per second. But at the same time, like in a game like Witcher, where you know the game is like, oh, look at this beautiful world around me, I would rather have the, because I also have like a fairly bigger monitor, like it's 24 inch, so it's not huge, but at the same time you can clearly see the difference between playing a game at 720p and 1080p. like I think I don't think I could play a game at 720p anymore,
especially if you have a larger monitor that resolves differently,
and people on a console will be playing on a television. That's just a fact.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I would probably say it depends on the game, and that's like the slight difference between us. Is for me, if it's a racing game, I need it to be 720p 60 of the two options. If there are only two options, 720p 60 is one I'd take because I need that Twitch reaction. Same with fighting games; you need that 60 frames a second. for pretty much anything else, like an RPG, especially like a Mass Effect or something slower, I would rather take the image quality of the 1080p. And it's right, and you're right. Like, especially for slower games, I don't notice the control difference between the two. And that is literally the major distinction for a lot of people. So aside from, so there's two camps for the people who need 60 frames a second, at least as far as I can discern. Because like the other side of it, the guys who don't really care about frame rate tend to be like one big conglomerate camp of, hey, if it looks good, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And we both agree with that. The other side of it, to play a bit of devil's advocate, is the two camps for 60 frames a second are A, the first camp, which is the louder of the two camps, but the one I think their opinion is a bit less valid, is games look better at 60 frames a second. Mm-hmm. So this is an interesting thing because it depends on a person's ability to perceive 60 frames a second versus 30 frames a second.
Right.
And also depends upon the monitor they're viewing it at and their ability to essentially discern drops and changes in frame rate as well. But that's a bit of a secondary thing. But primarily it is the monitor and your ability to perceive. People are, and I think the largest element of this camp are people who are raised on games pretty much from the start and the games they were playing were 60 frames.
Right.
Those are the largest group of people who care about this. Are essentially people who played in the early Nintendo games, I think it were. Like a lot of Nintendo games ran at fucking 60. Even a lot of PS1 games ran at 60. PC games forever. As long as you had a long enough, like a powerful enough PC, right, they'd be running at really high frame rates. Only until like the massive big jumps to higher end 3D graphics did things start massively reducing in frame rate. So back in the day, a lot more games evac'd. And this is actually an interesting fact to me, even though it's probably been self-evident for quite a while. Back in the day, more games ran at 60.
Right.
It's, as we get longer, there's a massive dip in the PS2, PS3 era, that like 15, 20-year segment. And if you think about it, it is actually that long. It's fucking 15 to 20 years. 15 years. It's been about 15 years, 14 years of that period. That's where the 60 frames a second thing was massively dropped because the standard moved to console, especially with the gaming public moving to console, and that changed this focus on frame rate. So those people who are feeling like essentially a lot of PC gamers and a lot of old console gamers who are used to seeing things at 60 notice that difference from 60 to 30.
Right.
And to them, it does actually look worse. For me, I was raised in the same period, but also raised on many handheld games and stuff. So I was used to, and a lot of movies. I actually watched more movies as a kid than I did play video games. So essentially, a movie's around 24p. So that like massive variance never meant anything to me. And for you, you're essentially most of your life has happened.
I played with a shitty computer, so like exactly. I could never experience what high FPS was unless I'm playing like CS 1.6, which
yeah,
like you don't have. It doesn't matter.
Like, exactly,
because it would not change how better the game looks because it looks so shitty anyways.
Yeah, and so. So that is one camp. And I actually think of the two, I actually find their argument less valid because I find that that group is the largest segment, which is just fixated on that specific specification, which is 60 frames a second, and how, inverted commas, good that looks. It's weird to me. And you find the giant bomb stoppers have the same thing. It's this weird like association with the frame rate something's running at, with the visual quality of a game. That disassociation between how good something looks and how well it runs and image quality versus frame rate. It never made sense to me. So the other group of it, which is what Total Biscuit and a couple other people are at, their argument actually makes more sense to me. The largest segment of this of that group, and I think in many cases it's the same kind of mentality, the largest segment of that group is also the same segment as the first group. So essentially, these are people who have played games for a long time that started at 60, a lot of Nintendo games. They've been raised essentially that. And then they hit that again, 2000 to around 2014 period of games dropping in frame rates. And for them, the major gripe is the control input lag.
Right.
So the feeling that 60 frames a second actually better because there is a legitimate difference, probably twice, like literally actually twice as much, in when they insert a control, input a control, and that translating to an action happening on screen. So that group is, especially like people like me, I only notice it with fighting games and driving games, but there's a group of people who notice with all games. And that makes a lot of sense. Like, for example, if you're playing Dark Souls, you're playing on a PC running at 60 frames a second, you will actually have a very different experience. Not necessarily a better experience, but a different experience to that running on PS3, which was designed for running at 30. You'll find that your ability to input a dodge, for example, I believe Dark Souls has been optimized at this point. It used to be locked to 30, so there's weirdness there. But your difference in pulling up a dodge in, say, in Darksiders 2, if you're playing that on PC running at 60 frames a second, your dodge will be you'll be able to input it on twice as many frames within a 15 millisecond count of time, right?
Right.
So you actually do have that extra playable difference. And that actually, I think, is a very valid argument. I think that makes sense.
But I think at that point, I think that's a valid argument in some games, but that's not applicable for a lot of games people play.
Right, it's like adventure games, RPGs. Like it's not.
And even if you're like, even first person shooters, if you're not playing it at like where you find it that important, that mm-hmm. if you're playing, let's say, what's like a non like Bulletstorm or some
right.
an FPS that's not, you're not playing at a competitive multiplayer level. I think it doesn't change the gameplay because the stakes are not that high, and to the point where you mentioned 30 to 60 frames in 15 milliseconds, not that big of a deal.
Right. That is the core of the two camps. And while I think they will never converge, we will never agree with people like Shinboy.
Yes.
Because there is that fundamental difference of perception. And we're not even talking about like perception versus reality. In this instance, I'm meaning like the physical ability of the human brain to perceive something. That is the difference I'm talking about. And for some people, especially if you're raised differently, like if you're raised on 60 versus raised on fucking 24 or whatever the fuck we've been playing games at, we're actually trained differently to look for different things in a visual image that's changing with the input from a game. That is a core difference between these two parties, and why I think people who argue about this on the internet are a bit crazy to me. Because it's literally arguing like about taste. Like, for example, what's your favorite like flavor of pizza, Noob Aroma?
Mayonnaise.
What? Mayonnaise, just mayonnaise on a pizza. What?
No. Canadian. It has bacon. Very good.
Okay, so bacon, mayonnaise, a couple of things on it, right?
No, mayonnaise. I just like mayonnaise. People, that's generally one of the arguments I have, is mayonnaise. I consider mayonnaise to be the universal condiment. Other people disagree, and they're wrong.
I'd say aioli is pretty close. Which is just mayonnaise with like garlic or whatever in it.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, yeah, you didn't know what aioli is? Hey! All right, you should talk to Dan Reichert. But me, I'd say my favorite flavor pizza is probably Supreme. And for many people, especially like imagine it like the difference of a fucking person who eats meat and a person who's a vegetarian who made the decision by taste.
Right.
You cannot, like, you legitimately cannot sway either person.
It's completely unobjective, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the same problem with this 60 FPS versus 30 FPS debate. So aside from the large group of people who are using this as a way just to compare two consoles, the people who actually care about it, those are the two camps. Well, the three camps if you count the feel and the perceiving as two different camps for the 60 FPS side. And none of them will ever agree.
And luckily, it's not most gamers that care.
Yeah. And sales are an easy indicator of this. Most people in the world do not give a fuck about the frame rate something's running.
As long as you can play it, if it's playable, whatever's the better game or whatever's the best cost.
So I'm going to declare you and me the secret winners of this debate.
Exactly. Yes. Why is this an argument?
Yeah. Yeah, like the public has decided. Like we are easily the majority, even if it's a silent majority. It is the vast majority of people who just don't give a fuck.
Stop it.
So that was it. That was news. So today, The Witcher 3 might not be 1080p 60 on consoles. Yeah. Surprise, surprise. My new gaming rig will run it just fine. That's kind of where I sit on that, and yeah, most games just fine. So I'm currently on the PC side of things, kind of scarily enough.
Yeah.
I don't know when that happened, but I guess yeah, whatever. Hmm. Either way, so that is this week. We talked about Japan. Another
one more story, I guess.
I'm so happy you have another story.
Okay. This is more of like the more like interesting. It's not a funny story. It's just like a introspective.
Those are my favorite kind.
Essentially, so like I stayed at my grandmother's place for most of the time. And essentially, I don't know about Japan because I only stayed at hotels in Japan, but we only really see like, you know, when we think of these East Asian countries, sort of like, you know, metropolises, well, you know, skyscrapers everywhere, you know, people, you know, on their crazy smartphones and how people talk about, well, in Korea, internet's like so fast. And they forget that Korea is like tiny country, the size of New York. People forget that. And the nice thing is, I guess I'll first start off, like, internet is fucking cheap there. For $10, we got, 20 megabits down for $10 and no contract. They came to install it the day next day. We canceled it, and then they just left. It's like full-on installation, line installation. They connected the line and things like that. But it's like, wow, it's so cheap. And people think, like, man, why isn't our internet so cheap? But it's sort of like, economically, Korea is still not that. I wouldn't consider it to be like a fully developed country. It's not a developing country. I forget what the term for it is, but it's definitely more of a post-industrial. It's not China. It's not Vietnam. Like manufacturing occurs at like advanced microchips and things like that. But at the same time, you know, where I stayed is my grandmother's place, and like huge sections of Seoul, like this major, you know, global city, was sort of really small, compact, old houses built, like old, not even houses. I wouldn't consider this houses, but sort of like apartments built in like the 70s and the 80s during like Korea's like full out boom. Essentially, the place I lived in had no air conditioning. There was no showers. Like, the shower only put out cold water, so we had to use buckets. I'm not saying this is all of Korea. I'm saying I lived with old people, and that was the case. But I'm saying, like, this entire neighborhood, like, the buildings look very, it's like, you wouldn't see buildings like this anywhere. The apartments that are being built aren't high rises that you would see being built in Canada. I can't say about Australia, but stuff like being built, you know, buildings here that are being built are like new condos, you know, that look like they're from the 21st century. Apartment buildings being built in Korea look like they're from the 1980s in the Soviet Union. It's sort of weird. I guess maybe it was like the different neighborhoods I was in. I don't know about the cost of living. It's definitely lower than Canada, obviously, or Australia, the cost of living. But at the same time, like, this isn't Europe. This isn't Western Europe. This isn't North America. This isn't Australia. GDP-wise, the country is very wealthy. But again, like, income inequality is huge in South Korea. So many people, like, especially there was a huge Asian financial crisis in 1998. A lot of people reverted back to poverty during that time and have sort of stayed there. Like, in terms of earnings, people are doing all right. But again, like, people are investing so much in their children's education that they can't afford to live in a particularly nice house. And I think maybe it just has to do with space. But it's sort of weird to see that despite all this magical glitter of future technology going on in East Asia, like, from the outside looking in, it does not look that great.
Weird.
Yeah.
Wait, so essentially they have high levels of technological infrastructure, like internet and manufacturing and that kind of stuff, and the throughput for importing like precious metals and all that kind of stuff.
Like, this isn't the perspective of most of Korea. Like, there's a huge middle class that is very much comparable in terms of earnings and lifestyle to the middle class in the West. But I'm saying, like, there's a much bigger lower middle class, I would say.
Right.
And that level standard of living in the lower middle class is significantly lower than what we would see in our lower middle class.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Again, the interesting Korea things. You can spout whatever. I just find it, especially since I think it's partially because you're one of those like history / political sciences guys. That your stories about it just makes, I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. Just the comparisons between where we live and where those Orientals, those slanty-eyed people live. It's very weird.
You're allowed to say that because you're Korean.
I'm allowed to say that, yeah. I know Asian people. It's fine.
And with that, one final goodbye story from Noobarama. What did we cover? We talked about your trip again. My continuing PC stuff. Oh, the reason benchmarking ties in with it is I realized while benchmarking my PC that I didn't really care how well it benchmarked.
Yeah. It's about like as long as you can run it at this amazing requirements. That's what matters. Exactly. Image quality. Yeah.
Yeah. And it got to the point where
that's
like,
why you benchmark.
Like, yeah. And it was all it was this, it was an assurance that I can continue to play games at okay frame rates for the next couple of years.
In good image quality, which is what matters. Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, so we've talked about a lot of SWTOR, and I guess a little bit more of Korea at the end. So thank you for listening to this podcast. I thought it was a fun time. I'm not sure if it's worth your time, but there you go. Exactly. You listened to it.
Anyway. You learned a little bit about Star Force.
The damage is already done. Yeah, and Star Force is really good. So let's get on to plugs. Noobarama, do you have any plugs?
PC Gaming Hub.
Yeah. Right, the Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub. Cool. That you can find that by...
And if you have...
Literally...
$2,000 lying around, you can go visit Korea. It's cool. Or Japan. Or it'd be more. It'd be 4,000 if you include like staying and spending.
Yeah,
money, like, which you ultimately will. But
not just the airfare, because that's a bad way to plan a trip. If you just save up for the airfare.
Yeah.
But yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you just Google Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub, it'll come up. And for me, it is actually going to be a YouTube channel. A channel that I found really fun to watch and look into when it comes to their PC, like pointers, tips, hardware reviews, that kind of stuff, is Linus Tech Tips. LinusTechTips, I think it was. Linus Tech Tips he's pretty good. He's a pretty fun guy, and he actually has pretty decent insight, and he keeps his videos relatively short. So if you have like, for me, waiting for a benchmark to end and you have your laptop handy or your iPad, you can just watch some of his. And they're usually pretty good, and he keeps up to date. So that is my plug. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Scotchcast. Goodbye.
Goodbye forever.
What? Oh man, I'm gonna go record next week. I don't know. Anyway, cool. Good. All right. I wonder how long that episode was.
That was 1 hour and 41 minutes.
Awesome. Nice and short. Relatively short.